Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mindfulness, selflessness, and compassion. Are those the qualities of tomorrow's leader?
Welcome to Health for Wealth, a podcast about health at work. We are Ann-Sofie Forsmark, health management consultant, and
Boel Stier, communications consultant and copywriter. Our motto is that health creates profits, if you're in it for the long run, that is. But how do you go about it? This is the question we aim to answer in this podcast. Let's welcome our guest with us online from Copenhagen. Welcome, Rasmus Hågard.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. And we obviously want to talk to you today about your newly released book, The Mind of the Leader. But I think we and our listeners want to hear some more about your background. You were just telling us before you came on that you're traveling a lot. But where are you from and what's your background?
So I'm originally from Denmark, Copenhagen, but live in New York nowadays. Travel most of the time, as you said. My background is I've been practicing meditation, mindfulness meditation, for the past 25 years and been teaching it for many years. But alongside that, I became a researcher about 15 years ago and started a corporate career after that as a consultant within the Sony Corporation. So I have a mix of a research and corporate background.
And your research, was that in the area of organizational culture?
Yes, that was organizational development.
Interesting. And so you have you've previously written books on the topics of mindfulness at work, predominantly, and you regularly lecture and you write articles. And how did this book, The Mind of the Leader, that you co-wrote with Jacqueline Carter, how did it come about? Why did you write the book?
So we're running a global training and leadership development firm called Potential Projects, and we've been working all across the world for the past 10 years with around 200 consultants that are working with us. And what we started to notice was that what we had been helping our clients develop, which was more mindful leadership, while that still was very important, something else was missing for leaders to be really effective in engaging their employees and creating cultures that were, let's say, fostering sustainable performance. So that led us to asking the question, what kind of leadership qualities are needed in the 21st century to really create people-centric organizations and to really engage your employees in a way that allows for extraordinary performance? So that was the background. And then we decided to partner up with Harvard Business Press, which is a wonderful organization that helped us with the research. We spent 2.5 years doing research on 35,000 leaders around the world and interviewing 250 CEOs from Microsoft and Accenture and McKinsey and so large international organizations to figure out what was the answer to this question. So that was kind of the background of it.
That's a lot of people to gain access to. How did you manage to do that?
So we have a very large client base because we're a global organization and because we've been in the field for many years and because we work with very large organizations. So we got access to many of the leaders of those organizations. That was the one part. And the other part was through HBR, Harvard Business Review. We also gained access to a lot of great leaders.
And what did you find during this this study?
Well, we found a few different things. First of all, that there is a general global massive movement happening right now in I would say the forward thinking of organizations of the world to make cultures more or make organizations more people centric. So to put people before the bottom line, put people before profit. That's one thing. The other thing is to develop what we have coined more truly human leadership. So leaders that are human beings before they are managers, people or leaders that are human beings before they are power or status or hierarchy, but that you need to lead more with the innate qualities that you have, be more authentic. So that was another thing we found. And then specifically to the question of what qualities does leaders need to have to be effective nowadays, we came up with three very clear conclusions. First of all, they need to be mindful. Secondly, they need to be selfless. And thirdly, they need to be compassionate.
Yes. Can you elaborate a little bit on those three qualities? Because they sound, maybe they sound obvious to some people, but then you don't normally talk about them in a traditional leadership context. So what is being a mindful and selfless and compassionate leader? How is that practice during doing work?
Right. Good question. So let's dive into them maybe one at a time. Mindfulness is just to define it is the ability to have a mind that is focused and that has self-awareness. And focus, as we know, is the foundation for any kind of performance and effectiveness. And today in a reality where there is an incredible amount of technology that is distracting us all the time and open plan offices, it's really hard to be focused and therefore deliver high performance. So focus is increasingly important, and mindfulness practice helps us to be more focused and more effective. The second part of mindfulness is the ability to have self-awareness to monitor your own thoughts, your own emotions, your own behavior, and your own words moment to moment. So basically having the ability to know yourself moment to moment. And obviously, as a leader, that is incredibly important because we have very high impact on the team we're leading, emotionally, physically, practically, performance-wise. So being aware of our thoughts and emotions so that we can better manage our behaviors and words is very, very important for leaders. So that's the mindfulness part.
Can I ask you something? I mean, mindfulness seems to be a very good quality in any way for any person. But I'm also thinking you're referring to open landscapes and digitalization and how it puts this load on us. Shouldn't we also work on those physical aspects of the workplace, try to reduce clutter around us?
We definitely should. There's no doubt about that. So like turning off notifications on our email and our phones is really useful. And creating office environments that are conducive for being effective is very important. But we know that open plan offices has come to stay. It's more economical and therefore it has come to stay. We know technology has come to stay. So while we can do a lot to improve our environment, there's only so much we can do. And the rest is really up to us as individuals or as teams to decide how do we manage that. And that's where mindfulness comes in. So we can be in an incredibly distracted open plan office environment with a lot of technology that is distracting all the time. But if we are mindful about it, we don't get distracted by it. We don't get carried away by it. So I think, yes, we need to work on both fronts, but there is only so much we can do on the environment and the physical aspects of work life.
And the mindful approach, you mean, helps us to sort what's important and what's not.
Exactly. Mindfulness basically helps us moment to moment to notice a distraction, but without getting carried away with it, so that we can consciously make the choice. Am I going to be distracted by a conversation that two colleagues are having behind my back? Am I going to be distracted by all the push notifications coming on my phone? Or am I going to stay focused on what is most important right now and attend to those things when I'm done? That's what a mindfulness allows us to do.
Can someone be mindful without actually practicing mindfulness? I mean, doing sessions?
That's a great question. There are a lot of strategies and techniques that you can do to develop mindfulness without a mindfulness practice. But in the end, mindfulness is a bit of a muscle. It is basically something that is happening in the prefrontal cortex of our brain, just right behind our forehead. That is a part of the brain that is managing our focus. And that one, according to research, can only be significantly strengthened through the actual practice of mindfulness. So sitting still, doing a specific exercise for 10 minutes every day.
So good. For those who are convinced, it's a powerful tool, and the way you describe it, it sounds essential for the both leadership and also for anyone in the kind of work environment that we experience today. And so the second quality is selflessness. And how would you describe that as an important leadership skill for now and for the future?
Yeah, so I'll just take a bit of a detour to get to why it's so important. The challenge with leadership is that with leadership comes power, and with power comes the psychological experience of I am important. And with that comes a natural growth of the ego. And I think history has shown very clearly that leaders with big egos can make terrible, terrible mistakes. So selflessness is the opposite of having a big ego. And just a little bit on the science on ego that we found. So first of all, when you have a big ego, you're very vulnerable for criticism. You're basically like a big target that is ready to be criticized for almost anything. Secondly, if we are having a big ego, we are very vulnerable for being manipulated. I think Trump right now is an amazing example of that. The example with having his meeting with Kim Jong-un from North Korea. He did not want to have a meeting with him, but then South Korea comes into his office and basically plays on his ego to make him accept a meeting with him. So when we have a big ego, we are very vulnerable for criticism. We're also becoming more rude, less considerate to others when we have a big ego, and we become very insular. We basically fall prone to or fall prey to a confirmation bias, that we only see what we want to see. We only hear what we want to hear. So we're basically not seeing reality as clearly when we have a big ego. So that's kind of the psychological mechanism of leadership. We naturally develop more ego, which is a negative thing for leaders because we're less effective. So selflessness is the opposite of that. Selflessness is the ability of putting ourselves outside of the informations we make. Basically park the ego at the door when we enter the office, that we lead for the bigger goals of the organization, that we lead for the bigger goals of the people and the team we're leading. That is not about our own desires, our own wants. It's not about our own status and hierarchy. It's not about our own reputation, but it's about having bigger impacts. So that's a short explanation of selflessness.
Okay. So would you say that traditional leadership practice or traditional leadership training is feeding the ego? Or is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. It's just a psychological thing that happens. I won't say anything about leadership training per se, because I don't think there's any data that leadership training is feeding the ego. But as an example, when you become the CEO, mostly you get a corner office in the top floor of the building. It in itself is feeding the ego. Wow, I get the corner office on the top floor. I must be important. Feeding the ego. And there's a lot of practices around leadership that is feeding the ego. So yes, to the answer, are there practices? Yes, absolutely. does leadership training. I don't know if that's true, though.
No, I don't think anyone would say, well, this course is going to feed your ego as leaders, obviously. But yeah, very interesting. And so the third quality that you talk about is being compassionate. It's something that we've had on the topic's been on the podcast before. And how is compassion related to good leadership?
Right. Compassion, again, is incredibly important for leadership. Again, if we look at the neurological side of leadership, what research has found is that, again, when we come into position of power, so with leadership, a part of the brain that is associated with our mirror neurons, so basically our ability to read and understand and empathize with other people, has proven to diminish, basically decrease, as we get into the position of power. And there are great examples of, and in our interviews, we also heard this again and again, a CEO of a large global consumer goods company who basically said, when I stepped into the CEO role 15 years ago, I was known to be a very empathetic guy, always understanding and looking out for people. And I have lost that. Those were his words. I have lost the ability to notice how other people are feeling and taking care of that. So that is a bit of a problem neurologically. We're simply losing our ability to connect with other people when we step into leadership roles. And we know at the same time that if we as employees, the leaders that we really look up to, the leaders that we want to follow, the leaders that we want to be loyal to, committed to, are the ones that have our back. And compassion is basically having the intention to take care of others, to have, you know, see others successful and happy. So if we as leaders develop the ability to have compassion, we are countering that natural tendency of losing our compassion, losing our empathy in leadership. And we give our people the clear experience that we've got their back. You know, you may make a mistake, you may fail, but I've got your back. That is what we get out of compassion. Basically, people that are more committed, that are more loyal, because they know we've got their back.
Yeah, and that sounds crucial for any organization or corporation of any kind. And because all this sounds fantastic, but I know, you know, you were talking about the people-focused organizations rather than focusing on bottom line. But in the end, everyone needs the good, profitable bottom line. So how does this way of leading an organization drive performance? I mean, I think you've given the answer, but if you want to make it more, if you want to mention it again, how does it drive performance when we lead mindful, selfless, and compassionate?
Yeah, I will give an answer to that question by talking about the absolute most people-centric organization that our research has found, which is Marriott, so the big global hotel chain. It's the largest hotel chain in the world. It's one of the largest companies in the world. They have 750,000 employees, so it's a giant. When Marriott was founded by Bill Marriott in the 1920s, it was just before the Great American Depression hit. When that happened, him and his wife basically had a choice. Are we going to lay off people and just hope that things will get better? Or are we going to take even better care of our people? And what they did was they put a doctor on staff to take care of their people, and they developed a simple business philosophy, which is, if we take care of our people, they will take care of our guests, and the guests will keep coming back. So basically, using compassion, I have got your back. I will take care of you. I'm concerned for you as my employee. Making that their business philosophy made them have employees that were incredibly loyal, and which, of course, in turn led to people that really took care of the guests, and which led to people coming back to Marriott. And that has led to today being the absolute biggest hotel chain in the world. And it's a philosophy that they have going through any kind of leadership training, any kind of mentoring. Everything they do comes back to this basic philosophy: people comes first. So it's not that they are not focused on the bottom line. Of course, they are focused on the bottom line. But their way of focusing on the bottom line is taking care of people, rather than, in old industrial terms, looking at people as a tool for profit, seeing people as the foundation for profits, which is a very different mental approach to leadership and to people. So I think Mary, great example, and that is exactly what we're starting to see in Microsoft, in Accenture, in McKinsey, in Google, and in many, many other fast-forwarding company nowadays, is this ability of putting people first, realizing that is the most effective way of creating basically sustainable profits.
Wow, it's a strong story. And my reflection is also that to enable this to happen throughout the organization, and it requires a very clear purpose, but also a purpose that me as an employee can attach myself to every day, and knowing that in any situation, I'm knowing that the right way to go about this is not this, but doing this, if you know what I mean. You need to be attached to your higher purpose, and you also need to have trust throughout the organization, because otherwise, this is not going to happen all the way throughout. Is that right?
That is absolutely right. Trust is so foundational. There's a great book that came out about a year and a half ago called The Trust Factor by Paul Sack, a neuro researcher from UCLA, who's basically saying that trust, according to his research, is the most foundational aspect of having a good culture. And that just makes total sense from an organizational perspective. So yes, trust is really, really important.
Yes, that was actually the topic of our previously released podcast. We were talking about trust. And trust, for me, transitions into our brain very much, because our brain obviously wants to feel trust before it does anything, pretty much. Because you also relate to neuroscience in your book, where you've actually seen that by training your mind, by mindfulness, for example, you can actually physically change structures in your brain to become kinder, more focused, more patient, and all these skills that we need today at work. And what kind of training are we talking about to achieve this change?
Right. So these changes in the brain that you're talking about is called neuroplasticity. The fact that the brain is plastic and can be changed by ways of doing specific things. And it's basically as simple as this. Whatever we do with our brain is what our brain becomes. So it's like the muscles of the body. If you take a weight and you lift that weight, the muscles that you're using are strengthened. The same, the muscles in the brain that we're using are strengthened. Meaning for every moment that you are focused, your brain becomes more focused. For every moment you are distracted, your brain becomes more distracted. And that's great news about the brain, because that means with mindfulness practices, we can actually train the brain to be more focused and more self-aware. With compassion practices, we can train our brain to become more compassionate. And if people are interested in figuring out how that works, we have developed an app that goes together with a book based on all the research that basically helps people on a neurological level to develop both mindfulness, selflessness, and compassion through some very specific practices. And the app is called The Mind of the Leader and can be found in the App Store and the Google Store.
Fantastic, because it sounds, I can imagine for myself as well, it sounds like slightly daunting if you you go through your morning routines and you feel stressed and you go, oh my God, I'm affecting my brain, I'm becoming stressed. But I guess you want to focus on the positive aspects that we actually can practice this where we are. I mean, at work and on our way to work and outside, is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's so possible. So yes, we gotta look at the positive side. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah, we want to be positive. I also want to finish off by talking to you about the acronym PAID, which I personally use a lot. And we also had listeners responding to that they liked that saying. And it also obviously, but it stands for pressure, always on, information overload, and distractions. And how did you come up with this, and what does it actually stand for?
Right. So this was part of our earlier works back 7 years ago, when we did our first research into mindfulness and how that was important in organizations. And we basically started to ask our clients around the globe, and we worked with around 500 large international organizations, and asked why they engaged in mindfulness practices. And their answers were very, very similar, and led us to this PAID acronym. everyone said that our people and leaders are under pressure. They're always on. They're information overloaded, and their work environments are heavily distracted. So this paid reality, the challenge about the paid reality is that it's a severe attack on our attention. And because it's attacking our attention, people in organizations, according to research, has proven to lose ability to pay attention. So basically, our ability to be focused today is significantly smaller than it was 20 years ago in organizations on average. We're basically in what could be called an attention economy today. We used to measure productivity in how many skills we had and how much time we had to do the job we had to do. But today, because we're simply losing our ability to be focused, attention is becoming increasingly important and equally important as to time and skills in terms of being productive. So paid reality is just an attack on our attention. And if we don't counter that with mindfulness, we will lose out. One of the findings in our research study, the current one, was that people who are more focused get higher ranks in the organization. And basically the CEOs that we talked to and assessed, generally, the more focused they are, the higher and the faster they raise in ranks. So I guess the morale of that is, if you want to really raise in ranks in your organization, you got to be focused. That is the key indicator of raising in ranks.
Mm. I think this also feeds straight into what you were saying about the plasticity of the brain. If we're constantly feeling distracted, under pressure, and we're always on, but we tend to be on to we're multitasking pretty much, it doesn't bring us a sensation of health or leaving work and feeling like, wow, I really had a productive day today. We feel kind of splinted, mindfully splinted rather than mindfully focused. Because when you talk about focus, it's obviously focusing on the right things and getting the things you want to do done, pretty much.
Right. Yes, exactly. That is what it is.
Well, I want to ask you one more thing that we also want to bring up in regards to compassion, because we've read an article in Swedish about a very important distinction between two words that we translate as empathy on the one hand and compassion on the other. And the article said that empathy makes us feel the same feelings as the person we relate to, and therefore sometimes prevents us from going into a solution-orientated focus. And compassion is more described as an understanding of the other person's feeling, and then, wow, what are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do about this? How do you think about this distinction between empathy and compassion?
I would say whoever wrote that article was definitely right, and this is a bit of a news to the world of both neurology but also leadership. Yes, it is true. When we empathize with others, we feel what they feel. When we have compassion for others, there is an instance of just feeling, wow, that person is in trouble, and then that moves into compassion, which is then. And solutions, as you say, solutions-oriented action. What can I do to support this person? Should I mentor? Should I coach? Should I just simply do stuff for that person? So that is a big difference between empathy and compassion. Empathy is basically bringing us down, while compassion is bringing us up. It is energizing. This is according to neuroresearch anyway. And empathy has specifically proven to be quite detrimental in leadership. I'm not saying that leaders shouldn't have empathy, because that is important to be able to read and understand how your employees are doing, or clients for that matter. But if you get stuck in just empathy, there are a few dangers of empathy. First one is it is leading to burnout. There's a significant raise in leadership burnout because leaders nowadays have been taught that they should empathize more with people, meaning they take on all the crap and suffering of people, making themselves burn out. This is especially the case for doctors across the world. But another challenge of empathy is that it actually makes us biased. Empathy, we empathize more naturally with the people that look like ourselves, that talk like ourselves, that have the same background as ourselves. And in times where we know diversity and inclusion is incredibly important for performance and health of an organization, empathy basically makes leaders be more biased and less diverse and inclusive. Also, it has been found that empathy leads to very fleeting action. So when we empathize with an employee that has a challenge, empathy basically makes us do something quick, like try to do a quick fix, but the day after we've forgotten about it. So empathy, very important, but only as a spark that then catapults compassion, which means driving action rather than just going down in the same rabbit hole as the one that's got the problems.
That's a good metaphor. You can empathy is your normal kind of initial response, but then you need to move into more compassionate mindset in order to make sure to alleviate whatever problem is at the root of the empathy. Well, yeah, it's a clear distinction that you make. I kind of personally reflect on when you tell someone that you about something that's happened. Wow, I'm so sad for you. And then, like, if I tell my husband, he goes, "Well, how are we going to work this out?" Wow. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I am looking forward to both reading the book, and the app sounds fantastic. Where can we read more about your work? Is it potentialproject.com? Is that right?
Yeah, that's where you can read more about the work, and you can also find a link to the book there. And if you want to read the book, go on Amazon or any other book retailer. It's also coming out in Swedish a little bit later this year.
Yes, and I also know that, because that's where I heard you and I got interested and wanted to get you on the show, was I think Potential Project in Sweden had a seminar on the topic of the future leadership that our world needs, and it was really, really interesting. And I think they have another breakfast seminar coming up soon in Stockholm regularly as well.
That is correct. So Potential Project Sweden, the Swedish branch of our organization, is a very, very active consulting business up in Stockholm and throughout Sweden. And they have all kinds of open events, as you talk about, where people can come and join. And there's, you can also find them on the website and connect with.
Yes, we'll put links to that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Rasmus, for coming on the show. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, and thank you for inviting. A pleasure to be here, and thanks for your great and well-prepared questions. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.